Hello and what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we've got all kinds of stuff to cover. There's one episode I was going to do specifically on like wine club operations and really wanted to try and do like a crazy like survey type of episode of how they work for you guys, how we view them, and we're going to push that back. To next week, actually. We're going to talk a little bit more about just kind of like wine sales, business clubs, and things of that nature, because there's so much other stuff that has happened in the last 7 days. I was like, we got to talk about other things. Before we do, as usual, a handful of announcements to get through. Many of you, for those of you that are in our wine clubs and things, those wines are on their way if they have not been delivered already. We are unfortunately seeing all kinds of problems with UPS and FedEx. I don't know what bee got under their bonnet this season, but if you have any issues, please reach out. We'll try and take care of it to the best of our ability. Unfortunately, the common carriers right now are a complete shit show for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's what sucks about shipping a bunch of wine is that we have no control over it once it leaves the winery. We just have to rely on them to do their job as a logistics company. And when they don't do it, it sucks. And we have to play customer service and catch up and replace wine and do all kinds of things. So if there are any issues, we've only had a handful of things pop up, but please be in touch. We'll take care of it to the best of our ability. If you're just on our normal mailing list, you'll be getting the release letter next week. We are also scheduling a whole bunch of events around the country. This is just the start of it. We have a bunch more that are coming around. If you head to our website, mtgawines.com, click on the upcoming events or just our shop page, you'll see tickets that are available. We currently have tickets available to a tasting in Columbus, another one in Indianapolis, and a third in good old Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be there at the end of March. There are also some tickets that are going to get posted for Charlotte, the Raleigh-Durham area, as well as Charleston, South Carolina. So those are going to be posted soon, hopefully first thing next week. I'll be sure to announce them as they go through. They'll also be on our newsletter. Speaking of which, you can sign up for our newsletter at mtgawines.com while you're there checking out those events. Please do so. Also, while you're at it, be sure to like, subscribe to the show here. If you can leave a little rating or review, that is awesome in terms of helping out with the algorithm and making it findable for other people. You can follow us on all of our social networks, on Instagram, The Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, as well as YouTube, where you can find the video version of this podcast and watch me dance around in my office. At MTGA Wines is our handle for all of those. I think that's all we got today. I always know it's going to be like a couple, you know, minutes of announcements. And that means that you guys can like fast forward through them if you want to, or if you think there's going to be something pertinent, you can dive into them at your leisure. All right. So we're going to start off today with a little bit of like going back to an episode. This was from, I think, last year, maybe even the year before. And it was very simply titled, Bottling is the Worst. And we are getting ready for our winter bottling room, where we typically bottle up all of our white wines, some of our bigger reds that we do some extended aging on. And it's, you know, if go back and listen to that episode, if you really want to know what a winemaker thinks about bottling, it'll tell you everything you need to know, because it is a logistical nightmare. It really is. And for the life of me, there's just nothing we can do to control it. As organized as we are, as on top of everything as we can be, things still go wrong. And I'm telling you right now, as I stand here recording this today, this is probably, arguably, the most organized I've been for years of like scheduling bottling ever. Like, it's just, it's amazing. It really, really is, because like we've got glass set up, labels are good, they arrived early even, corks were all set. Like, I'm feeling great about bottling and everything that we're trying to accomplish this year. It's rare that that happens. It always feels like there's something a little last minute. It always feels as though something, like we know things are going to go wrong, so we try to be as organized as possible. That way, when it does go wrong, we don't have to worry about other stuff. We can just tackle the problem at hand and kind of laser focus in on it, right? Kind of makes sense. When you got a lot of moving pieces, you try and limit as much variability as you can. That way, you can just work and move forward and do the things that you need to do to be successful. What I didn't account for this year, and some of you saw this on Instagram as I posted it last week, is that a bridge washed out. Some of you have been out to the winery who are listening to this, and you know there's that little like soft left-hand turn. You get off Con Valley Road, you hang a left, and there's like a little creek you go over, and then another little creek, and then there's the gate where the winery is located. And that first bridge washed out. So the main access point that we have to get into our property is gone. And our neighbors have a bridge to get over the creek, but it's old. It's supposed to be a 20-ton bridge. It's supposed to be able to hold like 40,000 pounds. But you look at it and you're like, this is going to fall apart any minute. And even the county like came out and looked at it, and they're like, yeah, that bridge might have like a year's worth of life left in it. Or if there's another big storm, it's raining as I'm talking right now, actually, it could just wash it out. Like, we're not really sure. Like, it's time to replace this thing. So the only other way in that we have right now is in dire need of repair. The other one is completely out. And we're like, we have to get like a 30-ton. We need to get like a 15-ton truck, a 30,000-pound truck across it to do our bottling run. So that's not going to happen. It's just way too much weight. That bridge is not stable enough. The neighbors are also like, we're trying to figure things out with the county. The neighbors are trying to figure things out. Like, it's a disaster right now. We had to cancel our bottling run. I don't know when it's going to happen now. Everything's lined up. Everything's ready to go. I've talked to our glass suppliers. I've already have the corks and the labels and everything else that we need, because those are relatively small packages that I can like set aside and just store. But this is why bottling's the worst. Even when you're ready, something goes wrong that's completely outside of your control. And like, as I stand here, I'm literally like just standing here with like my phone like up, because if I have to take a call, I have to take it, because we're in touch with everybody right now to try and sort out like, what do we do? To put this in a little bit of perspective, like, this is our small bottling run. This is when we bottle maybe a quarter of the wine that we make every year, maybe a third, closer to a third actually. And this doesn't include what we need these bridges and these roads for come harvest, when we have tens of thousands of pounds of grapes that need to go across these thoroughfares. Like, this is going to be a thing. And this is kind of like this rough trial run right now of like, okay, this is like a small ask to like run these smaller vehicles over these bridges. I mean, they're big, they're workhorse kind of vehicles, but we're not talking about like semi trucks that are loaded up here, right? I don't even know what to do. Like, I'm literally sitting here in my office this morning, like answering phone calls, texts, firing off emails, trying to sort things out. Nobody knows who's on first. No one knows what we're going to do. No one knows when the road's going to be ready. We've been told it might be a year before they can even get this thing back in operation. We're like, well, we've got this thing called Harvest that we need to work on. So yeah, that's a thing. Bottling's the worst, man. Bottling's the worst. The life and times of being a winemaker. It's fun, they said. They said it would be fun. We chose this path not because we thought it would be easy, but no, what was it? What's the quote? We chose this path not because it was easy, but because we thought it would be. It's brutal. So this is that time of year where like us winemakers, we're finally out of hibernation. We're getting out and about. We talked about that barrel tasting and thing we did a couple of weeks ago. Like, things are like, we're happening. Bottling's coming around. We're kind of gearing up for the growing season. More on that here in a minute. And then of course you have your bottling runs and things of that nature. And this is just like, oh, just so brutal. So brutal, man. This is why, and for any of you out there that are remotely considering getting into the wine industry, just know that this is the kind of shit you got to deal with. It's not just one thing to like make it or farm it, but the logistics involved, the licensing and permitting, the stuff that is going to go wrong. Like, these stories I can't make up, right? There's a good buddy of ours, David Tate. Some of you might be familiar with his wines from Barnett Vineyards, as well as his own label that you should definitely check out, Tate Wines, that him and his wife Suzanne own. Both of them you should check out. Great wines all around. And there's a bottling run last year where it was quite literally like it was the train wreck to end all train wrecks. I'm like, whew, thank God I didn't have to deal with any of that. Because typically, like I mentioned earlier, you know, you expect something to go wrong. You got to deal with it and move on from here, there, or everywhere. But literally, I mean, I don't even remember the full list of things he told me that went wrong on this particular day. And I'm sitting there like, whew, thank God it wasn't me. Thank God I didn't have to worry about that, because man, that's some tough sledding to get through a bottling run. And yet here we are. I think, you know, I might have one-upped him. He had a crazy day, no couple of days, no doubt about it. But this, like, I can't even get the work done. We can't even get access to the property with certain vehicles. Like, the good news is, like, the wine is safe. It's in barrels, it's in tank. I'm going out there this weekend to top everything up, make sure everything's full and tasting well. Like, everything's fine. Everything from a wine quality standpoint is totally fine. Like, we're good. But bottling is kind of important if we want to sell it. So we got to sort it out. So not that it's a competition, but I might be winning now in like bad bottling juju, I think. Like this seems pretty close. Like it's a close race, but I might just be ahead right now. Holy smokes, man. Like now, but the good news is that I have almost like a free week and weekend this coming week to like do all the other stuff that I don't have time for, which is great in terms of just like normal cellar ops, blending sessions, meetings. We're getting ready for Premier Napa Valley, a big fundraiser here for the Napa Valley Vintners, and working with the trade and wholesale side of things. Like there's a lot of other stuff going on, and bottling was, you know, going to take a lion's share worth of my bandwidth. And now I can do all the other things. I get to reconcile all of our account. I get to do all of our accounting and close out 2024 officially. It's going to be an amazing weekend for me. Let me tell you, crazy stuff, just crazy stuff. You love the curveballs that come your way. Now, I mentioned like getting ready for the growing season, and that's kind of right now, kind of typically what we're looking for. And as I mentioned, you know, it's raining right now. We got another little storm rolling through today. It's supposed to clear back up tomorrow, the next day. But this is kind of the stuff dreams are made of. When I was at the Napa Valley Vintner meeting last week, the week before maybe, you know, just catching up with colleagues, talking shop, talking shit. And we're talking, you know, how the season, like what we're kind of expecting, what we're hoping for, things of that nature. Granted, we're all just kind of shaking our crystal ball, hoping for the right answer, you know. And everyone was like, you know, the rain we've gotten, the reservoirs are full. We got another storm coming. Like, this means there's plenty of groundwater. We don't have to start irrigating really early. Like, if you're going to start a season, this is such a great way to start it. As long as now, once we're getting through pruning, and the vines don't push out and start growing too soon, that would be great, because that way we don't have to worry too much about like a frost season. Because very typically, like the storm that's rolling through right now, and some of you have probably experienced this or noticed, is that like after a storm rolls through, like the next day is typically like really chilly, right? At least for us, that kind of is how it is. It clears out, the, you know, sky is not insulated with the cloud cover, so you have these nice clear nights, but it gets really, really cold. So, you know, if we happen to have these storms or kind of like these warmer days and we have a little cold snap and there's any like new green growth on the vines, things can get frosted and die and we lose a good chunk of our crop for that particular year. So that's kind of like the thing we're holding our breath on right now, is just trying to make sure that we're pruning and we're kind of like ahead of the game right now, but we don't want to get too far ahead, because if we have a cold snap, then that creates issues. But as far as like growing seasons go, to have some great rainfall to like kick it off and keep the vines as they start growing like healthy and not, and keep them from going thirsty, like that's an amazing thing. Like we've got just, this is perfect vibes to start a 2025 season that I'm very, very excited about. I got to say, between 23, 24, where 25 is, I mean, granted, again, we're only a few short weeks into this year. It's going to be hard to argue with this stretch. This is very akin to what I would say like a 12 through 2015 looked like in the 2010s, where you just kind of had like one solid year after another. And realistically, you start splitting hairs on which one you like the best, because they're all awesome. And you just have to kind of figure out like which one you kind of like. Like 2022 is the only like oddball right now in terms of growing season, but that was only because of a late heat spike. And some of those wines are beautiful. Some of them kind of suck because they're super alcoholic and out of balance. Not ours. I actually think we did a pretty damn good job with our wines, given the circumstances. But I've tried some and they're a little rough around the edges. That doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. As with many Napa Big Reds, it takes some time for them to settle down. A lot of these 2022s are just making it out into the world. They might even be waiting to get, release some of these wines. So, you know, that's might be the only oddball year, because 2021 was a fucking gangster year too. It was so good. 2021 is still my vintage of the decade so far, by the way. Like 23 is right there, but I want to get those wines in bottle and see how they actually are when they're finalized. So we got like another 6 months before we got to worry about those. 2021 is the year to beat right now, 100%. And this 2025 season, the way it's kicking off, I'll take it. This is as good as it could possibly get. I'm really happy about it. We're going to see how it all shakes down, of course. Now, speaking of the 2025 season, you know what time it is. It's the California Grape Crush Report. Oh my goodness. It is just a beautiful time to be a part of this industry. And I'm going to show you an interesting little tidbit of information here because we've talked a lot about this in terms of grape pricing, specifically as it pertains to Napa Valley Cabernet. And it's something that is, you know, going to dictate a lot of what happens this season. I can't tell you how many growers have already reached out to me because they are wanting to get some fruit under contract, as it were. So we're going to look at two varieties today in particular. Let me bring up the 2023, and the 2024 is the preliminary report. So, you know, take that for what it is. Oh, did it already go to the page I needed? Oh, I love it when that happens. It's almost like I know what I'm doing sometimes, you guys. Like, it's just the best, absolute best. Now, this is kind of like one giant table and spreadsheet. It's not necessarily like the sexiest thing to look at, but this will illustrate a little bit of like what, you know, we're looking at here. Okie dokie, let me go ahead and boop, 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 boop. Okay, there we go. All right, let's zoom in on this bad boy. All right, so District 4. Technically, as far as the state of California is concerned, we are District 4 within it. Obviously, we're number one in reality, but come on, let's, you know, it is what it is. This is what we're looking at. We'll start with Cabernet Franc here, because I know some of you love Cab Franc. So we're going to start looking at Cabernet Franc right here. This is the 2023 report that I just brought up, and then this is the 2024 report. For those of you that are listening and not watching, I'll give you the best gist that I can of the information here. But for those that are watching, hopefully you can kind of see this and it'll be properly illustrated for you. So in 2023, for Cabernet Franc, this is kind of interesting because you had, on average, you had, let's see, how many tons here? Let me bring that up appropriately. So here's the number of tons and the price, average price for those tons of fruit. So for Cabernet Franc here, you had an average price of $10,654 in 2023 for one ton. And of that, you had a little over 1,900 tons total harvested. All right. Basically, within about the average. Last I checked, that was about the average price for Cabernet Franc. And I didn't check the total tonnage from like 2022 or 21, but at least gives you an idea like how many tons of fruit you're bringing in just for Cabernet Franc. And that's one of the least planted varieties. I shouldn't say least planted, but it's pretty scarce here in Napa, as you might imagine. There's just very little of it to go around. Cabernet Sauvignon is really the lion's share of the business here. Now, if we compare those numbers to 2024, so you had, call it $10,500 per ton and 1,900 tons harvested. So now we've got Cab Franc in District 4. Let me zoom out just a touch here. So what's interesting here is you saw an increase in tonnage, which is kind of a cool thing to see. That means that there was more Cabernet Franc available and being sold in Napa. So you had almost 11,300 tons. So you had, you know, maybe about a 700 ton, or sorry, that's the price. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Oh my gosh, I'm a dum-dum. So this is actually the price. The price went up by about $600 per ton. Go figure. You know, you can figure out the percentage yourself. But you had 1,600 tons harvested, where you had 1,900 tons harvested in 2023. So you saw a pretty decent drop-off in terms of just the overall volume of Cabernet Franc that was harvested. What that tells you is that a couple of things. One is that there were likely some people that let that fruit hang and it didn't get picked, obviously, which means they don't contribute to this report. So this base ton and average price here is weighted way too heavy, because if there was that much more fruit available that didn't get picked, and maybe some that isn't even getting factored into this report, man, this is where us winemakers are going to get to have a really stern conversation with some of our growers and be like, yeah, this is the average price, but look how much was left hanging on the vine. There's a lot more fruit available. And yeah, you guys got a good price last year because all these contracts were in place, but we all know that we saw stuff available at good quality at like $2,500, $3,000, $4,000 a ton. So interesting to see the drop off in the total tonnage. Now let's take that a little bit further, right? And let's look at Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a few pages. So we're back in 2023 here. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I always got to find the bottom of this thing because it just goes and goes. It's like it's pages and pages and pages. Pages and pages and pages. Oh, went past it. Here we go. So in 2023, the average price for one ton of Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa was about $9,200. Whew, pricey. And you saw almost 57,000 tons harvested. It was 56,790. Let's round up to 57 just for easy math, right? Because 57 is a totally round number, very easy to do math with, of course. So you saw 56,000, almost 57,000 tons harvested at $9,200 a ton average price. That's a good chunk of change if you ask me. Now let's check out 2024, last year. Da-da-da-da. We gotta scroll until we find it again. Oh, here we go. So you saw the average price of Cabernet go down about $200. It came in at just over $9,000 in 2024. So it was almost exactly $200 less. And what's crazy here is you saw 43,500 tons harvested versus almost 57. You saw almost a 14,000 ton shortage when it comes to picking fruit from one year to the next. That's a lot of grapes. That is a lot of grapes. 14,000 tons. Right? I did that right? No, 14. Yeah, we did that right. 14,000 tons less. You know, that's a lot of fruit. And the price went down, as you might expect, because people were likely paying less for it. So I bring that to illustrate exactly what happened. Oh, here's the next article. Spoiler alert if you're watching. That's what we were talking about for the last like 8 months when in regards to the grape crush report. And that Cabernet Franc I use because it's one of the smaller varieties, but very, very popular out here. You know, price is really high. You did see it drop off a little bit in terms of what would harvested. When you talk about Cabernet Sauvignon and you see a $200 drop in the average price, but you see a 14,000 ton shortfall from one year to the next, that is the meat of the issue that we've been talking about. That is a lot of fruit that did not get picked. And I guarantee you that number is higher than what was reported here. So, you know, it's going to be a crazy time for this growing season. You know, we all want to work very synergistically and we want to, you know, farmers want to grow good produce. We want to make good wine out of that produce. However, I've said this many times, the growers for a decade or more have had us by the balls and been able to raise their prices. And I'll be fair, you know, labor has increased, expenses have increased. I get it. But when you're talking about 30 and 40% increases, you know, year after year, or even just 10% increases year after year after year with no end in sight, this is the kind of shit that happens. Is at a certain point, you're going to hit a breaking point because there's going to be a glut on the market. Something's going to kind of fall out of favor a little bit. And then you're going to have this correctional phase that we're now entering. I'm so excited for this. This probably seems pessimistic, but we've been needing this in the Napa grape market for a long time. And the current operating expenses is just unsustainable for so many folks. And you can't just keep demanding more and more and more and more. At a certain point, things are going to break and they're going to shift. And that's what we're in right now. I hate to say it this way. I've probably said this before, but I truly hope it happens again this year. I truly hope that a number of producers either have a tough time and they, you know, times are going to be tough. They already are tough. I hope it's a tough time again. I hope this correction continues. And I hope that we start to come back to some sort of equilibrium because that's only going to benefit you, the consumer. I am a consumer-driven guy. And this is the conversation that I've mentioned many a time, that if I didn't need to charge what I charge for my wines, I wouldn't. I would reduce the prices if I could, but I can't because of the operating expenses, how much everything is costing us to actually do what we do. If those expenses go down, I could reduce prices. That's how I would operate. I can't say that my colleagues would do the same, but you know, if your profitability is such, you know, and you're going to see it become more profitable if you keep your prices, or equally as profitable if you, you know, keep your prices steady or maybe even reduce them. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, the idea that you have to continually increase, I think is kind of a fallacy. That being said, the Federal Reserve always tries to maintain what, inflation around 2 to 3%, something like that. So in theory, increases are just naturally baked into our economy across all things, not just wine. So it's rare that you actually see anything ever come down because the prices are always going up. They're always, I repeat, going up because of how money and interest rates and things are managed in this country. So if we start to see a correctional phase happen, just like any other commodity, good things can happen. Because if you're on the buying end of stuff, you can negotiate harder. You can buy low and then eventually maybe sell higher. Basic capitalism type stuff. And it only benefits consumers in the long term, in my opinion. Obviously, there are exceptions. Obviously, I'm no economist. I'm a dum-dum when it comes to this kind of stuff. But this is what makes sense to me. This is why we have wines currently. We have library wines that are cheaper than our current releases. Why is that? Because it was cheaper to produce those wines 5 or 7 years ago versus then more recently. It's a crazy concept. And people look at us like, what do you mean your 2017 and 18 are $85 or $75, but your 2021 is $85? I'm like, well, 21, it was so expensive to bottle our 2021. Like we had to, and our operating costs went up so much, like we had to charge more. But based on those prior vintages, like, we're still seeing the margin we want on those wines because the cost of those when they were bottled and produced was a different conversation. So I think, like, as a business owner, that's the responsible thing to do. If you're trying to maintain some semblance of balance between you and your customer base, like this, like I feel like every once in a while I have this like kind of like anecdotal conversation with people regarding this. And I'm like, you know, like, does this not make sense? And there's kind of like this hemming and hawing around it. I'm like, but this, like, I feel as though this is like how it should be, right? Like, this makes sense, I'm pretty sure. Like, maybe am I the crazy one? I don't think so. I feel like this makes sense from like a traditional entrepreneurial, like, business standpoint. I think it's a little bit of like a counterculture opinion. But, you know, if you can do better things for your consumers, then do them. And they'll have more buy-in, and they'll trust you more, and they'll buy more, or they'll be more consistent. Like, it's a synergistic relationship across the board, all the way, like from the supply side and the production side to the sales side and what ends up on your dinner table. Like, this teamwork makes the dream work, right? So if you're treating us really well by supporting us and believing in what we do as a business, the least we can do is try to support you as well. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being crazy, but that's what makes sense in my head. Because I think when you start to get like over your skis with certain things, like, it does not bode particularly well, which is the smoothest transition I've probably ever had into our next topic for today, which is kind of the continuing struggles that the wine industry is having. I think you've seen many, many places just get too big for their britches. As I was doom scrolling through Instagram reels probably last week, the week before, this thing popped up, and it was someone that was interviewing someone who is working on the distribution side of things. For the life, I didn't catch who she worked for. I got to try and find it. And if I can, I'll put it in this. I'll put a link to the post in the description. I don't know if you scroll past and all of a sudden it's gone. I don't know where it went. But I need to find it, and I'll try and put it into the description. So take a look at the description if you want to see this post and see what it's all about. But it was this gal who works in distribution, and she was talking about like these small family places that just kind of keep popping up. And in particular, Napa, this is something that happens regularly. And she was like, oh, like, cool, you have this small brand and you want us to distribute it. And she's like, but the story is, we did really well for ourselves in some way, and then we bought a place in Napa and it had a vineyard around it, and then we started making like 300 or 400 cases worth of wine, and oh yeah, it's $300 a bottle, and we know you're gonna love it. And this lady just scoffed at the idea and was like, no, like, this is not your business. Like, this isn't some, like, this is not how it works. And you need to understand that. Like, you have, like, jumping into the wine side of things like this just isn't going to be a big thing for you. Number one, because of the price point. Number two, you have the same story as everybody else who's passionate for wine and wanted to get into it in some way, shape, or form in their life. Like, it's not necessarily unique anymore to have that story. You know, you're just another person with plenty of commas in their bank account who bought a vineyard and now you want to make wine. Cool story. How is that unique? How is that special? How is that different? And this is something I always preface, you know, you typically when I touch on that subject in particular, is like, I have no grudge against anybody who's done very well for themselves and wants to be a part of this industry. I do start to take issue when they call themselves the winemaker or the vintner and they have absolutely nothing to do with the winemaking or the vinting of said wine. That is where I start to draw the line. So if you don't work in the cellar full time, if you don't focus on winemaking full time, that's like not your job, you know? I've got plenty of friends that work for folks, and family for that matter, that work for folks that, you know, did not make their money in wine. They made it in tech, they made it in the medical field, they were lawyers, they were accountants, or they were in the finance world. Like, and there's these, you know, very romantic stories of, you know, we loved wine so much and it was a part of our everyday life and we had a dream of owning a vineyard one day. And you're like, cool, that's nice. That's a lovely platitude. But, you know, why? Like, what is your actual, like, why? Like, what's your mission statement with this brand and this label? Like, how and why should I connect to it in some way, shape, or form? And I think that's where you're starting to see a lot of the struggle and kind of the oversupply of wine coming from Napa right now, is because you have a lot of these brands that frankly have nowhere to sell this wine. And they're having inventory backup. They're canceling grape contracts. The grapes aren't getting picked, as we saw on the grape report. And it's just this cascading effect. Now you could even take that, you know, a step further to some of the big guys. News came across the desk today, bright and early, that Silver Oak, the Duncan family and owners of Toomey as well, that Toomey is closing up, I think, two or three of its locations, one in Anderson Valley, one in downtown Napa, and their main Calistoga property as well. We also saw the bankruptcy of Vintage Wine Estate last year. Things are rocky. And if things started to get overextended in any way, shape, or form, and if you don't have, I mean, for, and that's a great established brand. The Duncan family has been around for a long time after the founding of Silver Oak and eventually starting Toomey. And I believe they now own Ovid up on, you know, as well. Like, they've got a they've got plenty of holdings and they've done very well for themselves. But when you see what has kind of, maybe I would describe Toomey as like a, you know, on the verge of like iconic brand, like it's a house, it could be a household name. You see it out and about, you know, you drive by it all the time. It's from the family of Silver Oak. Like, it's got some great stuff there to grasp onto. You see them close up shop with all those locations. You're like, ooh, spicy. Like, this is like, if there's ever been a canary in a coal mine, that's probably a decent, that's not a canary. That's a fucking pterodactyl in a coal mine, right? Like, that's a big deal. So, you know, there is this, like, you know, cascading effect, as I mentioned, and you're seeing it ripple, not just through some of the small wine brands that are kind of these mom and pop, like passion projects that frankly are just, they're just that, they're a passion project. It's cute that you want to distribute your few hundred cases and you're going to charge $175 to $300 or $400 a bottle. Like, I wish you all the best. I hope you can make it happen, but don't be surprised if it doesn't. Because you're kind of setting yourself up, you know, against a headwind here, especially in this era that we're in right now when we're talking about this kind of correctional thing. It is so interesting and I love it. Like, I'm here for it. Like, the more I know, I probably sound, for those of you that were, you know, listening to all the episodes this fall, I probably started sounding pretty pessimistic about my outlook about the wine industry, the business, how we're going to get through it. I know that I got pretty feisty over the last few months. And now that we're kind of on the other side of it and like our business survived and we're dealing with other things like getting bottling trucks across bridges, some of that's in the rearview mirror. And we're looking forward to a great year of being on the road. We're looking to a great year of events around the country and hosting people at the winery, like doing all kinds of cool stuff. It's still moving forward for us, which is not what a lot of people can say, which is basically put me in this perspective of like, I just got to be thankful that we're able to continue doing this thing. That is outstanding. And I'm very, very, very grateful for it. And I'm going to do everything I can to continue doing it into the future. You know, we're a decade and a half into MTGA, our brand being a thing. We're 3 years going on two full years of doing the podcast here, like, and being trying to be more active on our social media and interactive with you guys. And I think there's a lot of great stuff here. And it's just a matter of fostering it. You know, this brings me back to like my camping days as a Boy Scout, where it's a wet, rainy day like it is outside today, but you gotta start a fire so you can cook over it. And you find a piece of wood that's hopefully not too wet. You're shaving off, you know, as much as the bark and all the wet pieces so you can get to kind of the core of it that's still pretty dry. And you're trying to get those shavings going. You're trying to do the one match Boy Scout fire kind of thing. And it's just, you have to be smart. You have to be very, very dedicated, and you have to be diligent and just not give up, basically, and foster that little spark and that little flame until you got something that actually is creating some coals to cook over. And that way you can just let us cook and you can just let us do our thing and get after it. I'm pumped. I'm excited. I'm here for it. This next month is going to be a complete shit show because of bottling. It's going to be very exciting on the business side of things. I'm so excited to get back out and around the country this year. It's going to be solid. I love it. So here's the very positive, optimistic mic on the episode today. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has again been an episode of the Wind Up Podcast. Again, be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you're consuming your podcast. Follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to head to our website. That's mtjawines.com. You can check out some of those events that are happening around the country. We're going to be posting more in the coming weeks, so be sure to check in on those regularly. You can also sign up for our newsletter on the website, Wine Club on the website. And if you scroll down on the homepage there, you can submit questions. There's a little email form there where if you want to be a part of our monthly Q&A episode, you can submit questions through that form. They'll come directly to me, and we'll try our best to answer them here on the show. We do that the last Wednesday of every month. Some of you are very familiar. Some of you have been just awesome contributors to that, and we hope to keep that going. So again, thank you all so much for tuning in. Have an excellent rest of your day, week, and we'll see you next week here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.